What does a jet propulsion lab look like?
The jet propulsion lab is it's a really exciting place to be. Lots of engineers and scientists walking around. From my point of view, every day I see someone I know from the field. But just behind my office is the high bay. It's mm-hmm. the huge hangar, essentially. It's a large clean room where they're assembling right now the Mars Science Lab. So anytime I want to, I can go and see the people in their bunny suits assembling this rover that's going to go to Mars. And you know, you walk around and you see displays of all the different satellites that are in orbit now, all the rovers that are there. You see timelines for the future exploration, and it's very infectious. The excitement's very infectious.
You are an astrobiologist, and you are the lead on the team for habitability on Mars.
Let me qualify that. I am a lead for the habitability. I'm lead for the habitability team of the Icy Worlds Initiative at the Jet Propulsion Lab, and so the initiative includes efforts to understand the habitability of primarily icy satellites, so Jupiter, Saturn, and sort of in general. And I think there are common aspects of Mars. I'll talk about that tonight in my lecture. That link it to habitability questions. And the rest of the team is looking at things like survivability of signs habitability and how we detect these things. You know, it's hard to get at life. None of NASA's missions have the goal of actually finding life at this point. The search is for habitability. The search was once for water. Now we know there's water on Mars, and we have strong evidence there's liquid water in a lot of the icy satellites, albeit under their surfaces. So the question is, can we find signs of activity on the surfaces? And actually, there's a lot of reasons to think that we can.
What kind of activity are we talking about? Life-related activity or just geothermal?
Oh, you know, hydrothermal activity is what I study. But generally, when you talk about habitability, you talk about chemical conditions that are conducive to life. So you talk about liquid water, which means you have to have the temperatures appropriate for water, so between 0 and 100 degrees C. We know that organisms can live under those conditions. Yes. And then you need the nutrients. Well, you need the chemical components necessary for life. We don't know how life came into existence on Earth, but a lot of theories purport that they might have come into being in hydrothermal systems. I like those theories because that puts it under the ocean. And, you know, so you could have those conditions on Mars or on Europa.
Could you maybe spell out some of these theories?
Okay, so I'll define just a few buzzwords then. The systems that I study are serpentinizing systems.
Okay,
so these are systems where water is being crammed into primordial seafloor. So this is a basic chemical reaction in which the rock structure incorporates the water. And part of that chemical reaction leads to hydrogen being produced. It gets excluded from that incorporation. Okay. So we have had this revelation in the last 20 years that there are active serpentinizing systems in the seafloor of Earth. One of them is called the Lost City. It's just off the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. It was discovered maybe 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you have these huge carbonate chimneys being formed, and surprisingly, we have organisms living there. Now, one of these theories for the origin of life posits that the chemistry in these serpentinizing systems is ideal for life's origin. The idea is that the metabolic processes that organisms use, the ways that we make energy, can all happen geologically at these sites. And so the idea is, once you have the motor running in these hydrothermal systems, you basically have the systems themselves metabolizing, then those molecules that are being produced in these metabolic reactions then acquire aspects. They learn how to become more efficient and develop molecules that look more like the ones that we use. And eventually you have fully formed organisms. They develop more complex molecules that make the reactions go faster, and then they develop means for encoding the production of those molecules. So that's where you start thinking about RNA and DNA.
Yes.
And cell membranes and things.
What are you looking for when you are looking for life on other planets or satellites?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've found, we have all these examples of organisms living in these crazy places we never thought we would find them, you know, in really acidic riverbeds mm-hmm. in hydrothermal systems.
Yeah.
So in all those cases, what we see are complex organic molecules, some of them being produced contrary to what we might expect on chemical bases alone. So you have catalytic reactions happening, making these molecules. And you have systems out of equilibrium. So one of the things that Carl Sagan supposed long ago mm-hmm. is that if we see a planet around another star that has methane and oxygen in the atmosphere, those are two molecules that don't normally exist together for very long because oxygen breaks apart the methane, it breaks it down, and mm-hmm. so you would expect to have CO2 and hydrogen and oxygen instead. So we look for chemical disequilibria, mm-hmm. and we look for complex organics. And so those are the sorts of things we're trying to characterize in the lab at JPL and other places. So we're using instruments that go onto these robotic space probes and trying to get the instrumental signatures of these molecules. And so methane is one of those molecules that we're looking at. I'm actually working on a project looking for methane on Mars.
Now, Stephen Hawking recently said, stop looking for alien life, because they might be potentially dangerous. Is it possible to have alien life that is so potentially evolved that it could be dangerous?
Well, the kind of life that he's worried about is the kind that would be able to intercept and interpret our radio signals. And so if we were broadcasting to such life, they might say, oh, well, there's a relatively simple yet somewhat advanced species. We should go and colonize their planet. Now, thinking about the history of human colonization of newfound spaces, we haven't exactly treated the newfound people very well.
That's
right. And not necessarily because we intended to subjugate them. Of course, in some cases we have. Mm-hmm. But Stephen Hawking's point is that we may not be treated well. It wouldn't bode well. But you know, another thing to consider is that we've already sent a lot of these signals out. You know, we've been broadcasting television for some time. Those are very weak signals, but one might see them. We are using adaptive optics to compensate for atmospheric disturbances, and that involves shooting powerful lasers into the sky. Actually, one of the searches for extraterrestrial intelligence on Earth involves looking for aliens practicing adaptive optics on their planets. It's a long shot, but you know, it's something that we might see.
You once mentioned that a chemical involved in bad breath and flatulence in humans could lead us to alien microbes on Mars. Can you please elaborate on that?
Sure. So methyl mercaptan is the molecule that's associated with bad breath. It's familiar from the aforementioned processes. Also part of the smell of rotting cabbage. So you get an idea of what we're getting at. It turns out that it's a byproduct of the breakdown of one of the amino acids that we use. Humans mm-hmm. use 22 essential amino acids, and we need these building blocks of proteins to live. And all organisms, well, most organisms, it turns out, use that amino acid.
Hmm.
So finding methyl mercaptan would bring us one step closer to finding life. Now, it's difficult to find methyl mercaptan because if oxygen is around, it tears up the methyl mercaptan, mm-hmm. breaks mm-hmm. it down to dimethyl sulfide, mm. also a smelly gas. But the point of the research that I did was to point out that one of the instruments aboard the Mars Science Lab, part of the sample acquisition mission, this little box that's going to pick up samples of the Martian soil
mm-hmm.
and break them down and look at the complex molecules that might be in those soils. One of these instruments can look for methane now,
mm-hmm.
can look at isotopic signatures in the methane, that is the ratios of heavy carbon to light carbon, heavy hydrogen to light hydrogen,
mm-hmm.
Which tell us about how the methane was formed. It turns out the same instrument can see methyl mercaptan, and that's something that wasn't planned, but it's a matter of knowing what to look for. No one had thought to look for it, and I just demonstrated that we can see methyl mercaptan if it's there.
Is it being used?
Well, I hope to participate in the analysis of the Mars Science Lab data. The Mars Science Lab will land on Mars next August, and this is an amazing innovation in terms of exploration of Mars. We have currently the Mars Exploration Rovers, these little sort of toy car sized rovers, solar powered, you know, that have showed us some amazing views. Mm-hmm. They've showed us that a lot of Mars, the geology has strong signs of being altered by water. So early Mars was a place that had water everywhere, or mm-hmm. at least a lot of water. But this new rover is the size of a VW bug. It's nuclear powered, radiation powered, it's going to have a lot stronger instrument suite and be able to see more things.
What else will be covered in today's talk at the Space Center?
Sure. Not just serpentinization, but the prevalence of serpentinization on Mars, on Europa, this moon of Jupiter, and potentially elsewhere. And the big point that I want to make is that on these objects, they're cooler and smaller, and that leads to the ability for water to get deeper into the interior, which means you have more rock to interact with, which means you can produce more hydrogen.
Okay.
And there are ways that you could produce hydrogen in a continuous fashion, such that you might have an abundant source of energy for life. And in Europa's case, you also have a source of oxidants, oxygen-rich molecules mm-hmm. that are the complement to hydrogen, and that lets you drive redox gradients, that is, gradients, chemical gradients that are necessary to support life. I will be mentioning in the talk opportunities for internships at JPL.
Okay.
So
that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.